Please welcome Michael Kaplan.
The summer before college, I got a job working at Warehouse Records in Westwood Village. And I really liked this job for a number of reasons. One was that Westwood Village was a college town in its own right. So that was just sort of a constant reminder of where I was heading. You know, it just gave me a sense of forward motion, and I like that. I really enjoyed being in a work environment where loud music was playing constantly. And that may not be everybody's cup of tea, but it was definitely mine. But by far the best thing was I was able to practice walking up to women and starting conversations. Because I had gone to an all-boy high school, and I did not go on a single date during those 4 years, and the only girls that I knew were from speech and debate, and we were this uncomfortable subsection of humanity that was just awkward and argumentative and loud. We were just loud. We were always talking over people. But in the store, I could walk up to a woman and say, "Can I help you with anything?" And it wouldn't be creepy. It wouldn't be embarrassingly contrived. We had roles. I had a warehouse name tag that said Mike. I was an employee, and they were a customer. And that was so much better than a high school dance when going up to a total stranger and trying to start a conversation there, which just always felt impossibly risky. So I would make my way among the customers saying, "Do you have any questions?" Thinking that at some point I would encounter a beautiful, mysterious redhead who would say, "Yes, do you know when the new Earth, Wind, and Fire is coming out? And is there a smart, sensitive young man, preferably without a lot of volume control, who might go out with me?" Now, the flaw with this scheme was that I didn't know anything about popular music. I didn't listen to rock and roll in high school, or pop, or soul, or glam rock. I was a spoken word and show tune geek. And the manager, in fact, had hired me to curate that meager section of the store. So I would regularly patrol those bins and ask myself, should I order one or two copies of The Pajama Game? Because if somebody buys one, we want to have a backup. Those were the kind of high-level, powerful decisions I was making on a regular basis. So to fine-tune the fantasy, I was looking for a mysterious redhead who was going to ask me, "Is there any difference between the London cast album and the Broadway cast album of My Fair Lady? I mean, because they both have Rex Harrison and Julie Andrews. And is there a smart, sensitive young man without a lot of volume control who'll go out with me?" So one Saturday night, I'm making my way through the crowd, and I see two young women about my own age, and I go up to them and say, "Can I help you with anything?" And they look at each other in shock, and one of them says, "Oh my God, he sounds just like him." And the other one said, "Yeah, I know." And then they looked at me and said, "You sound just like Richard Dreyfuss in Goodbye Girl." Now, Goodbye Girl was the big hit romantic comedy that year. And in it, Richard Dreyfuss plays a struggling actor who has to end up sharing an apartment with a single mom played by Marsha Mason. And of course, they fall in love and get their nice, happy ending. And I didn't sound like Richard Dreyfuss. I don't want to make sweeping cultural assumptions, but I think these two women saw this movie. They were totally captivated by Richard Dreyfuss. They left the theater, and I was the first Jewish person they bumped into. But this was the best opening I had ever had in my life. And when they looked at me and said, "Say something else," I was ready, because I was not only a spoken word and show tune geek, but I was a movie buff. And when I went to a film, I totally absorbed it and memorized dialogue and remembered the moments. And so I gave them one of the most famous moments in the movie. And I went, "I don't like panties hanging on the line." And the two of them dissolved into delighted laughter. And this was a reaction I had never gotten from the opposite sex in my life. And all I could think was, what now? How do I parlay this into a phone number, or a date, or a teenage three-way? I was not choosy. And as I said, there were two of them. One was very pretty and excessively giggly, and the other was not as pretty and seemed quite intelligent. And I know that that's a big cliche. And I want to assure you that as I got older, I became more enlightened in the way I would distinguish between two halves of a female duo. It might be, oh, she's humanities and she's sciences, or she's faith-based and she's atheist. But in this case, really, we were dealing with the pretty one and the smart one. And I wanted the pretty one. I was thinking I would love a summer romance with the pretty one. So how do I keep this good Richard Dreyfuss feeling going? And in my mind, I'm combing through the complete filmography of Richard Dreyfuss. And unfortunately, this was the beginning of his career. There wasn't a lot to draw on. He didn't do Down and Out in Beverly Hills or Mr. Holland's Opus. Close Encounters of the Third Kind hadn't even come out, wouldn't even come out until winter. So I'm going through, and finally I hit on something, and I look at them and I say, "This was no boating accident." The pretty one looked at me like I had just started talking in Mandarin. But her friend laughed and nodded with appreciation. She got it, Jaws. And in that moment, I did a little inner recalibration and thought, I would love a summer romance with the smart one. But by playing the Jaws card, I had boxed myself in. And I did not have the confidence or the social chops to switch gears in any way. And, you know, in the history of seduction, there are no moments that contain the segue, "Speaking of Richard Dreyfuss." I mean, speaking of Richard Dreyfuss, what? What's your name? Yeah, where do you go to school? Do you like debate? I was going to have to ride the Richard Dreyfuss train all the way to the last station. And friends, I did not have a full fare ticket. And in a Hail Mary move, I said, maybe I'll go to college after all. Now, Richard Dreyfuss was in American Graffiti. At the beginning of the movie, he and Ron Howard, they've both gotten into college. And over the course of this epic night of adventures, Ron Howard decides he won't leave the small town. He's going to stay with his girlfriend, played by Cindy Williams. And Richard Dreyfuss, who's been chasing the mysterious blonde in the T-Bird, played by Suzanne Summers, decides, okay, maybe he will go to college after all. But because this is a great movie, they convey all of that through action and images. But in my panic, I wrote a bullshit line of dialogue and shoved it in Richard Dreyfuss's mouth and went, maybe I'll go to college after all. And now I've lost the smart one as well. And you know, I've actually released something naked and desperate in the air, because now we're just seeing exactly what we've got here. The two of them were hoping to extend the comfort of the romantic comedy world just a little further before they had to return to a life that promised no happy endings. And I was standing there needing a whole lot more than their laughter. And at that point, we just couldn't even look each other in the eye. And I mumbled, "Do you have any questions?" And they shook their heads wordlessly. And I went back into the crowd searching for the mysterious redhead who desperately needed a copy of Damn Yankees. And the problem with this story is that it boxes me in the same way that conversation boxed me in 40 years ago. I can't really pull a cute little button or a uplifting metaphor. All I can basically do is say, speaking of Richard Dreyfuss, you're going to really like this next story. Thank you.